I told Ron this morning, he gets to do my very favorite passage out of Ecclesiastes. There is a time for all things. And I love the song by the Byrds. So don't let anybody tell you that popular culture isn't influenced by biblical ideas. So Ron gets to do my favorite passage. This morning, we're going to talk about knowledge, or we're going to talk about maybe the best way to say it is living wisely, and how there's a difference between wisdom and foolishness. So let's just read this passage first, and there are going to be some slides that pop up on the screen that I'm going to skip over, because maybe I can skip them without them popping up, but I do want to come back to them. So let's read together Ecclesiastes, the second chapter. What did I say on the title slide? I said it's chapter 3. It's chapter 2, verses 12 through 26. And by the way, there are outlines on the back lectern. This week's is knowledge. Next week's is time. So grab one of those before you get away, and I will send them out so you'll get them via email as well. Ecclesiastes 2, beginning at verse 12. And ignore for a moment the yellowed sections, because those are things that I want to come back to if we have time. He says, and I turn myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. What can a man do that cometh after the king? Even that which hath been done long ago. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly, as far as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head. The fool walks in darkness. Yet I perceived the one event happened to them all. I said in my heart, as it happened to the fool, so it will happen even to me. Why was I then more wise? I said in my heart, this is also vanity. The wise man, even as of the fool, there's no remembrance forever. Seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How doth the wise man die? Even as the fool. So I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun was grievous to me. For all is vanity, striving after the wind. I hated all my labor, wherein I labored under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who shall be after me, who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, wherein I've showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned about to cause my heart to despair concerning all the labor wherein I had labored under the sun. There's a man whose labor is with wisdom and with knowledge and with skillfulness. Yet to a man that hath not labored therein, he shall leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. What hath a man of all his labor and the striving of his heart wherein he labors under the sun? All his days are but sorrows. His travail is grief. Even as the night his heart takes, and even in the night his heart takes no rest. This is also vanity. There's nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. Who can eat, who can have enjoyment more than I? For to the man that pleases him, God giveth wisdom and knowledge and joy. To the sinner, he gives travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that pleases God. This is also vanity and striving after the wind. So let's go back to the beginning and let's think about some of the questions that we began with. The first thing that I'd like to think about is this idea of hevel. It's translated vanity in the King James and in the American Standard Translation. In the New American Standard Translation, many times it's translated futility. In the contemporary English translation, it uses the phrase, it doesn't make any sense. This is in fact, the theme of the book of Ecclesiastes. And it stands, in my mind, in contrast to the book of Proverbs. We talked about this a little bit last week. The book of Proverbs is an effort by Solomon to elevate the man who pleases God. And he says, if you please God, if you follow God, if you walk after God, you'll be blessed. But then you have to contend with the fact that when you look around you, a lot of wicked people seem to be doing better than people that follow God. So what's up with that? That's what the book of Ecclesiastes is trying to answer. You make that observation. Wicked people prosper, good people suffer. How am I going to find a resolution for that? And so I think that's what Solomon, or the writer who assumes the Solomon-like characteristics, I think what he's saying is, what can I use to help me figure out the answer to that question? And he thinks, well, I'll use all of these things that we're going to talk about. And in the end, he says, that's all hevel. It's just, what use is it? It doesn't make any sense. So with that in mind, that's the way that I approach the book of Ecclesiastes. So let me ask these questions. These are the way we began. Why would Solomon consider foolishness? If his goal is to try to figure out why are the wicked prospering and the righteous are not, why would he think about foolishness? Any ideas?
There was just one more thing that he was going to consider.
Okay.
Consider just about everything else.
Okay. He does. He considers a broad spectrum of things. And so it makes sense that he would also think about foolishness, madness. Yeah, Carol.
It's as Jane says, it's the opposite of wisdom. You need to look at the full spectrum. And it says that wisdom is greater than folly. And it said that scripture that light overcomes the darkness. So in order to overcome folly and know what wisdom is, you have to know what's foolish.
Okay. That's an interesting concept, that he considers folly in order to understand wisdom. Okay. It could be. Why else do you see him looking at folly, foolishness?
Just because it's there.
What do you mean, just because it's there?
Well, you would have to ask that, wouldn't you? No, it's part of our lives. Everybody knows that these things exist.
Okay.
And is madness, does that mean that the person, that's a person that's on the street drooling and talking to themselves? Is it that kind of madness? And folly, is it the person who throws away everything that they have and leaves themselves destitute? Is it that kind of folly, or is it ha-ha-ha, merriment folly? And madness is just another kind of emotion that's not as severe as what I mentioned before.
Okay. Good point. Good point. So he has to look at the kinds of answers that people would come up with. And you're right. He looks at this because it's there. I mean, this is the way that a lot of people are going to respond to the observation that wicked people prosper and the righteous suffer. Okay? Other, yeah, Carol.
Well, I'm a procrastinator, so, and there's some things that are so simple. It takes me like 30 seconds or 5 minutes or something, but it's folly when I put all of these other things in front of something and I still haven't found wisdom. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Okay. Other ideas. John, you had an idea? No?
I'll just say I wasn't going to say anything, but I think sometimes foolishness has the appearance that that's where the pleasure and that's where the fun and that's where that's I want to be happy. That's where I can land.
Okay.
I think he was
somebody else.
I think he was playing with politics.
Okay, how so?
Well, I remember, and I don't recall where the scripture is, it said that a wise man's choice is leaning to the right, but the fool leans to the left. So I know it was involved in politics.
That could be. That could be.
You find that scripture right away.
That could be. And the more I thought about this discussion this morning, the more it occurred to me that wisdom and folly share something in common. Because as I was reading through the material that I gave you, he talks about the fool as a person who says in his heart, there is no God. And that's contrasted with the wise man who says there is God. And I think that misses the point. It made sense to me when I first looked at it, but I want you to think with me about this phrase, under the sun. Okay? This is a phrase that's used 29 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a phrase that only appears in one other place other than Ecclesiastes, and that's in 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter at verse 12. And I think here in 2 Samuel 12, it's the contrast between things that are done in secret and things that are done under the sun in the light of day. Okay. So I don't think that's the meaning of the phrase here in the book of Ecclesiastes. I do think that that's what it was when this is written in 2 Samuel 12. This is what David did in secret when he committed or when he raped Bathsheba, and then he conspired with Joab to have Uriah killed. That was all done in secret. And God says he's going to have to pay for that openly under the sun. So I don't think that's the meaning here. in Ecclesiastes, I think the meaning of this phrase, under the sun, is best understood in terms of Hebrew cosmology. We see glimpses of this even in the New Testament. You remember when Paul says, I knew a man who was caught up into the third heaven? This idea of the third heaven, that's a concept that isn't really expanded for us. The only way to kind of come to an understanding of that is to think about what the Jews thought about heaven. And the Jews, in terms of their cosmology, in terms of how they perceived all things that are, okay, the cosmos, they talked about three heavens. The first heaven is where the birds fly, as distinguished from the earth, okay? So that's where the birds fly. That's when we look out, we see the clouds and the birds, all of those things. Second heaven, that's where the planets are and the stars and the sun. It's above where the birds fly, but it's just a step above that. Then the third heaven, in Jewish cosmology, that's where God lives, the third heaven. That's a realm where all the created spirits exist. Okay. It's just as real as the first heaven where the birds fly, or the second heaven where the planets are, but it's the third heaven, it's above that. So when he says, if you're thinking under the sun, what does that mean?
You're leaving out
God. That's right. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in my New American Standard Bible, verse 12 starts with so, which connects it with the previous chapter where we dealt with all the physical things that were accomplished. Now, so we're going to talk about the things that aren't physical, that are more intellectual, I guess you call it, or emotional, or whatever.
Okay. Okay.
And that would still fit in with what you're talking about now. We can do all this without having God.
Right. It's under the sun. Yeah. Okay. So if you limit your thinking to under the sun thinking, then you're not going to be able to solve this problem of the wicked prospering and the righteous being excluded from prosperity or suffering. Okay. So now this is what's critical. This is why that's so important. Both folly and wisdom in Ecclesiastes are under the sun. See the point? So you can't say folly is denying God, and fools is a word that's used regularly throughout the scripture to refer to people that deny God. A fool says in his heart there is no God. But, and that's clearly under the sun, right? But wisdom is under the sun too. Here in Ecclesiastes, wisdom doesn't put God in the picture. So, folly, wisdom, both exist on this level, and as much as folly is vanity, wisdom is vanity, or hevel It's just not going to answer the question. So I think I was wrong when I started thinking about this in terms of the fool denying God and the wise man accepting God. That's not Ecclesiastes. The wise man in Ecclesiastes doesn't put God in the picture either. It's a wisdom that's derived from only what you can observe on this earth. And there are a lot of really wise people who base their wisdom on nothing more than what they can observe. Okay. Now, what they observe is true, but they're only seeing part of the picture. They're not seeing the whole picture of the cosmos. And if you limit your search for wisdom to what you can observe, it'll be folly. It'll be empty. It'll be better than it's better than folly, but it's not going to answer the question. Okay? Does that make sense? I think that's a really important thing to realize here in the book of Ecclesiastes. Wisdom is excluding God. It's under the sun. So, and God is not under the sun. God is above the sun. So, under the sun, wisdom excludes God. Just like folly under the sun excludes God. Now, I'm not sure that there's a folly that includes God. I can't imagine what that is, but the wisdom that's under the sun is just like folly, and they're both going to turn out to be heaven. Yeah.
Can we call that worldly wisdom? And then on the other hand, we also have heavenly wisdom because God is wise.
Okay. And that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. But we have to realize you have to put God in the picture in order to answer this question, and he'll eventually get there. The wise man will, the Solomon figure will eventually get to that point. He'll say, look, you've got to put God in the picture. If you can't answer the question, if you constrain your thinking to only what you can see. Yeah. How did I define wisdom? It's living with living a considered life, as opposed to just you wake up in the morning in a new world every day. Okay. We usually say wisdom is knowledge applied. And that makes some sense if you're restricting it to earthly wisdom, because wisdom that's earthly is based on knowledge that you can acquire, generally speaking, through observation. You can acquire a lot of knowledge through observation. That's most of what medicine is just observation. Okay. I had my appendix was going to rupture one time. Well, was going to rupture. My appendix was inflamed. Okay. I went to the doctor. He said, you need to go to the hospital. So I'm laying in a hospital bed. I'm hurting. Doctor comes in. He says, well, you've got two options. We can take out your appendix, because I have no idea why you have one. Or we can see if it starts to work again. And we'll just keep you in the hospital until it does. If it ruptures, we'll take care of it. But if it starts to work again, that'll be fine. He said, I can't tell you why you have one. But he said something really interesting. He said, I don't think you'd have one if you didn't need it. Our knowledge just doesn't extend far enough to let us say, oh, this is what your appendix does. It's kind of this vestigial organ, or sometimes we think of it as a vestigial organ, that we don't know exactly what it does. We know it traps some toxins and does some of those things, but you seem to function just fine if you don't have one. So what does it do? Well, that's his approach was the difference between thinking that I can look at the world around me and I can understand every question, and thinking, you know, there's some things I look around me and I just can't tell. Knowledge is not going to get me there. That's the basis of Ecclesiastes, at least as far as I see it. Okay? So, if you're looking under the sun, and you're looking at under the sun wisdom and under the sun foolishness, how is wisdom better than foolishness? Wisdom, he says, wisdom is better than folly.
Maybe if something should be wise enough not to commit.
I can't hear you.
I said maybe in wisdom you might be smart enough not to commit some of the folly.
Okay.
Maybe you don't make poor decisions as easily and readily as folly does.
Okay.
Financially, safety of your family, maybe, I don't know, job prospects.
Yeah. Makes sense. You're not as likely to drive 110 miles an hour on an icy road. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm going to drop back to the book of Proverbs. If you've explained the difference between Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, Proverbs and Ecclesiastes are different. You've explained that. I understand. But in the book of Proverbs, the introduction there, words of Solomon now, part of that is written as a manual for living, for learning what's right and just and fair, and to give young people a grasp on a reality, but it's also for those who learn the ropes of what's really real. This is out of the message, so it's Peter's version, but it gives a good idea of what's going on. So to learn the ropes, figure out what's right. But this is, again, back to that idea of earthly, because this is the words of Solomon, even though we know all scripture is inspired.
Right.
It's there for us.
Right. And Proverbs will explain that the righteous prosper, the wicked don't. But only if you expand your horizon. Okay? And that's what Ecclesiastes does. That's kind of the second step to Proverbs. Got to expand your horizon. And to be honest, expanding your horizon is hard. Because I can't see above the sun. I can only see below the sun. I have to have faith that beyond the sun exists. And there's good reason to have that faith. I'm not denying that there's not good reason to have that faith. But if you live your life under the sun, and to be perfectly honest, I think that's the way most people live their lives. Under the sun. You have to be able to see it. And I mean, now you have to understand, that's a big statement coming from a man who's a behaviorist. Because I think it doesn't exist if you can't measure it. So that's a big step for me to expand my horizon. But why is wisdom is better than foolishness? Because it'll keep you from making foolish mistakes. You know, frankly, I have a hard time feeling bad for somebody that's driving 110 miles an hour drunk and splits his car in half because he hits an oak tree. I used to have a cup that said foolishness or stupidity should be painful. You know, I had to get rid of that cup. Jim said I can't have that cup because I make stupid decisions. So wisdom is better than folly. How do people make the pursuit of wisdom under the sun wisdom, how do people make that the reason for living?
I have a definition here of wisdom, the quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment.
Okay. Is that under the sun, over the sun?
Good judgment in general.
Okay, but that's under the sun, right? Good judgment, that's under the sun. That's, don't jump in blue pool. It's 32 degrees. Yep, Bob.
I was just going to say that if we're talking under the sun, both wisdom and folly are subjective. They change all the time because we're under the sun. So what might be wise at one time in another era, it might be folly and vice versa.
Okay, that's a really interesting thought. Hang on to that for just a minute. Carol, let me get you.
We're used to thinking about wisdom applied through God's knowledge. In other words, it's not our knowledge, it's God's knowledge. It's not our wisdom, but God's wisdom.
Okay.
So I think that's the hang-up that we have on this word, because earthly wisdom is not the same as God's wisdom.
Okay. And that may fit with what Bob is saying. How many of you eat tomatoes? Right? Did you know that 200 years ago, tomatoes were considered poisonous?
Yeah.
Yep.
Still are.
They still are. No, they're not poisonous. 200 years ago, tomatoes were poisonous. When they came across the Oregon Trail, do you know why a lot of children died? Their mothers got sick and they nursed their babies with tainted milk. We just didn't know. We didn't understand. If you go back to the Civil War, you know, more Civil War soldiers died from dysentery than died from battle wounds. You know why they were dying from dysentery?
The latrines were too close to the camp.
Exactly. They put the latrines too close to the camp. And now we look at that and say, well, everybody knows you don't do that. You know, you don't put your latrine upstream from your water source. That's just dumb. But, hey, there was a time when people didn't understand that. And if you look at psychology, and you go all the way back to the beginnings of psychology, they thought there were four humors. And those humors, these four bodily fluids, determined how you felt. I mean, at one point they, I can't remember who it was. At one point they even thought that your arms moved because of essentially a vacuum or air pressure. That you had like an air pump inside of your body and your arm went up because you pumped air into it. Hey, that's what Bob is saying. Knowledge changes. We're learning more and more and more and more every day. I think now the knowledge base doubles in like 10 years. It may be even faster than that now. But we're learning new things all the time. Yeah, Carol.
I think stupidity can grow awfully quickly too.
Well, that could be. That could be. We learn things and we choose not to acknowledge those things. I think that's folly. Wisdom is saying, hey, act in accordance with what you know. The problem is your knowledge is so limited. And that may be the point that Carol was making, that knowledge that comes from God is perfect knowledge. Okay? It's not dependent upon me being able to observe and increase the store of knowledge. It's just God giving me little bits of it. Yeah.
It talks in Revelation about when you hear that the Christ is coming, not to go here and not to go there. That's that kind of knowledge that I'm talking about that God gives us and protects us from many things.
Okay. And earthly, under the sun knowledge would be, hey, he's coming from the east, run to the west. The reality is he comes to the earth. He just comes everywhere all at the same time. It's not going to do you any good to run to the east or run to the west. Okay. I think this is a critical kind of understanding if we're going to benefit from Ecclesiastes. It's the things that he prized are all under the sun things. And he eventually reaches the conclusion, look, you're going to have to broaden your horizon. Because if you don't, you're just not going to be able to answer the questions that necessarily arise. It's just, it can't happen. And the thing that I think is so interesting in this passage, anybody else see the interesting part of it when he says the fool and the wise man die the same death? What's the difference between Aristotle and me? When it comes to death, we're all going to die. And he gets a pine box and I get a pine box. And he goes back to the dirt just like I'm going to go back to the dirt.
God does not discriminate.
Yes, God does not discriminate. On the earth, if you think under the sun, then that's it. You die, you get a pine box. Nobody remembers you after you're dead. Anybody know the name of one of the Egyptian sorcerers, wise men, who tried to confound Moses? I'm sure they were famous in Egypt. Okay. I have no doubt that they were famous. But it won't be very long until nobody can remember Jonas Salk. Or any famous man that had marvelous wisdom and marvelous knowledge. How long will it be before people won't know who Albert Einstein was? or Madame Curie won't be long. They'll be forgotten. And if you consider only under the sun stuff, you work hard, you leave it to your kids, and your kids spend it on stupid stuff. I can say, yes, I agree with that statement because I've spent some of my parents' money on stupid stuff. Other thoughts? Okay. Next week we'll take up time. Let's take a break for a few minutes. I think Dean rang the bell already, didn't he? Yep. Okay. So let's take a break for a few minutes and we'll come back together and we will continue our discussion. Thank you.